This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3799 for Thursday, the 23rd of February, 2023. Today's show is entitled, My Home Router History. It is hosted by Norrist and is about 32 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, recent router maintenance makes me remember all the fun I've had with my home network router.
So, I recently had to update my home router. I had to rebuild it, and I was thinking about like all the different sort of iterations I've had for a home router, and I thought it might make an interesting HPR episode. So I'll kind of start from the beginning, maybe work my way forward a little bit. The first thing I can kind of remember doing that was even sort of like a home internet router was, around, 2000-ish. We still had dial up, only one computer, but we, you know, started getting, additional PCs around the house and, with dial-up, we would have to connect one computer at a time. So if one computer needed to be on the internet connected, the other one needed to be on the internet, disconnect and connect it. And I remember figuring out or learning that there was a way to share internet connection, even if it was dial-up. And you'd have to buy like a special Ethernet cable, like a crossover cable, and connect one to the internet and then connect the other one to the internet connected computer via the crossover cable. And then I remember in Windows, they had something called connection sharing that you could use, or if you didn't have a WIN modem and you could actually get connected to a dial-up ISP on Linux, you could use IP masquerading to connect. And you could have sort of multiple computers sharing an internet connection. So it was faster internet starts becoming available, start thinking about how can I share a connection. The things like DSL and cable modems are starting to come out. And then to share, you know, you need a Ethernet card for your network connection to the internet. And if you want to share it with another computer, you've got to have two network cards. That's a big deal, having two network cards in the same computer, right? So I've gotten cable, and wanted a way to figure out how to obviously use multiple PCs with a cable internet connection. So I've gotten, started looking on eBay for like cheap computers and found something for like, it was like $50, but then like the shipping was $50, and it was still probably the best deal I could find, or the most affordable thing I could find. And then got it, two NICs on it. I remember experimenting with a few different Linux distributions, setting up the connection sharing. There were tools or guides for using just plain old IP masquerading on a kind of generic Linux server, but I couldn't get it to work. So the first thing I remember actually working well, was a distribution of Mandrake called the Multi-Network Firewall. And it almost seems like a dream because I know I use this. I know it existed and I know it worked. But it's really hard to find any documentation or any website on it. But I know the Mandrake Multi-Network Firewall existed. I know it used it, but I don't think it was maybe only got a single release. But it worked really good, just like everything else Mandrake. Another distribution I remember using a lot was one called IPCOP, IP space COP. And it was pretty nice. It had like a web UI to manage it. So you could put, you know, just get any PC with two or three network cards in it, configure it. It had all the settings that you needed to use for DSL. I remember DSL having some extra things you had to do. Cable, you just plug in the modem, but for DSL, you had to have some extra, like username and password and stuff. But IPCOP had all that stuff built in, and you could manage it with the web interface. I started getting a little nervous about using IPCOP. It went a long time without any updates. And after a few months, when you're using a project that's kind of small, and you start to wonder, is it not getting updates because it doesn't need any updates, or is it not getting updates because the developers have stopped paying attention? So I just wasn't sure, and I wanted to do something different, so I started looking around. I'm not sure how I heard about OpenBSD, other than just being on the internet, hanging around OS forums looking for Linux info. But I knew OpenBSD had a strong reputation for security, and that it was a good choice of operating systems for networking and firewalls. So I found some instructions for setting it up. There's always been, OpenBSD has always had very good documentation. And there's always been on the part of the FAQ some instructions for setting up a small router using OpenBSD. So, I don't remember exactly when it was, probably, around 2010-ish, went and installed OpenBSD on some of these sort of junker servers that I had around. You know, I had the one I mentioned earlier off, that I bought off eBay, and there was another one that I had found out on the street, that I had picked up and sort of cobbled together. But, you know, at this point, you know, I've sort of moved away from, dedicated firewall distributions. And I moved to using OpenBSD as my home router, and it was nice. Again, I had a good feeling because I had a regular release cadence. You know, every 6 months you get a new release, and it's, you know, a fairly active project. So I knew that, I knew it was being maintained, and I knew it was being kept up to date. And I knew that, unless I made some really silly, misconfiguration, that, I was going to have a secure, network router. So to go along with the network router, when I started to get started to buy devices that had the capability of getting on Wi-Fi, I had purchased one of the Linksys routers that were specifically sold to run Linux, or the WRT distribution. It was the 54GL model. I had it around, and I had it running a Tomato firmware, and for the most part, I would only use it as an access point. But because the hardware that I had my firewalls on was kind of junky, sometimes I would have a hardware failure and have to sort of promote the Linksys router from access point to sort of primary home router. I remember mostly having hardware issues with power supplies. I remember having like a stack off in the corner, like three or four PC power supplies, just a sort of hot standbys, because those things always seem to go bad. And then also at the time, all the hard drives were IDE, and like spinning IDE drives that, while reliable, they can get banged around too much or they'd die. So between the hard drives and the power supplies, usually a few times a year, I would have to do some hardware replacement, and in the meantime, use the Linksys router as the primary home router. And at some point, I decided it'd probably be a worthwhile investment to go ahead and buy some hardware that was meant to run as a firewall, it was meant to be used as a firewall. And I had looked at Socris, which I don't remember how to spell that, but I kind of felt like they were a little overpriced and underpowered. So I heard about a company called PC Engines, and they had a hardware line called Alix or Alix, A-L-I-X. And they're small, i386 compatible, about the size of a Linksys router, and they have like three network cards on them, and like a 800 megahertz or 400 megahertz processor or something like that. Not very powerful, only like a quarter of a gig of RAM, but it would have three really good network cards on it, or really good for the, at the time, network cards on it. They supported running OpenBSD. A lot of people would buy them to run OpenBSD on it. So I picked up one off eBay. One thing about the PC Engines line is they don't have video. There's no like VGA port or anything on them. It's all, you do all the admin by serial. And I had, it's not anything I'd ever done before. This was new to me at the time. So I had to kind of learn how does it work when you plug in when you connect a couple of computers with a serial port, the one with a keyboard and monitor, how do you get a console on the one that doesn't? But I eventually got it figured out. And the original Alix line of PC Engines, it wouldn't boot off USB. So if you didn't have our operating system already installed on it, the only way to install it was to set up a TFTP server and Pixie boot. So again, relying on the OpenBSD documentation, they had that process documented well. So it wasn't very hard. There was a page in the FAQ about how to set up a OpenBSD Pixie boot TFTP server. So you could Pixie boot these Alix devices, and what it would do is when the device would boot up, it would get its IP address via DHCP, and then it would ask for, DHCP would tell it, hey, if you need to boot, here's a file you can boot from, and then it would pull it via TFTP, and what it was actually pulling was the OpenBSD installer image. So once you get it up and installed, works great. After the initial install, the twice a year updates from the OpenBSD project, it was easy to update from one release to the next. So I used that for a few years. No real issue. But there are some kind of hardware limitations with the Alix line. One is that the network devices are only 100 megabit. And at the time, that was fine. But I could sort of see into the future where, a lot of my devices around the house were gigabit, but I couldn't really use gigabit because my main router wasn't gigabit yet. And then the other hardware issue was that the disks on the Alix line were compact flash. There was nothing wrong with compact flash. It worked well, but by the time I had this Alix router, compact flash was falling out of favor, and it was really hard to find a replacement compact flash cards. And if I knew, if I did have to replace the compact flash, I'd have to go back and do the TFTP and install and all that stuff again. So I did buy a spare Alix on eBay. They started getting really cheap. So I found another one just like I had on eBay just in case something did happen. I wouldn't have any problems with it, but I knew that it would be a lot of trouble to set back up again if I did have trouble with it. So I went ahead and since I found one cheap, I bought it, just kind of kept it around as a hot spare. So PC Engines came out with a new line of hardware called the APUs, specifically the APU2. I bought one of those in, I think, 2015 or 2016. And it was a pretty significant improvement over the Alex line that I'd had before from the same company, PC Engines. We still didn't have a video. Still serial only, but by this point, that wasn't a problem. But it did have, you know, gigabit network adapters, and it had a mSATA for the drive, so I felt a lot better about, you know, the availability of storage for it. So I had updated, bought the new hardware. These boot off USB, so I got the OpenBSD installed. I believe it was OpenBSD 5.6 was the version I installed. It has three network cards. I didn't mention this before, but Alex also had three network cards. But I would set up like three networks, or one network card was for the internet. And then I had two networks in the house, one for like trusted devices and one for untrusted devices. So, OpenBSD is really cool. It's not, too hard to use. But it's not like, some of the purpose-made router software distributions. There's no web GUI or anything like that. So you have to, it can do everything that the web GUI ones can do, but you have to kind of get in there and read man pages and write config files and stuff like that. So one thing that I was really sort of missing from a router-specific distribution was the ability to have reserved DHCP assignments. So you could you could tell the router, you know, a MAC address and say, always give this MAC address this IP address. And at the same time, you could also provide a name for that device. And then you could also have, you know, it would set up the DHCP assignment and also set up a local DNS server. So so I wanted to do something like that with OpenBSD, and all those things are possible. You just got to know how to do it and set up some configs for it. And I got tired of kind of doing it manually. I wanted sort of an easier way to do it. So I set up, I did an HBR episode about this, 3187. So if you want some details, you can go back and listen to, HBR 3187. But, synopsis is, I would make a CSV file. It would contain a MAC address, IP address, and a host name. And then we'll have an Ansible playbook that would read the CSV file and then write the configs, the appropriate config files for OpenBSD, and then restart all the services. So now, instead of a GUI, I just have the CSV file I could fill out, IP address, MAC address, host name, and I would get the DHCP reservation and the local DNS. So I would, was using OpenDNS, to do content filtering. And, I won't go too deep into how OpenDNS works, but you can, it's a DNS server that you can say you can limit specific content, kind of like Pi-hole does with ads, but, it's an interesting product if, you know, if that's something you're interested in. But, so I had on my OpenBSD router, set up a caching DNS forwarder. So when, you know, a client on the network requests has a DNS request, it would return the cache result if it had it, and if not, it would forward it to DNS servers, DNS resolvers. So I wanted to make sure that nothing on the internal network was able to bypass the DNS server on the router. So I added some PF rules to capture any traffic on port 53 that wasn't going to localhost, redirect it from where it was going to the localhost, and then it would look up the requests from OpenDNS. I would also use the router to limit internet access to certain times for certain devices. So the OpenBSD firewall is called PF, and PF has something called tables that you can store IP addresses in, and you can load IP addresses into the tables at runtime by putting them in the config, or you can just create an empty table and then add and remove IP addresses later. So what I did was have a PF role that would block all traffic to anything in this PF table, and then I would have cron jobs that would load or unload IP addresses based on time. So at specific times, I could insert specific IP addresses into the table, and it would cut off the internet access for those devices. And then later, whenever it was time, I would have another cron job that would empty out the PF table. It worked really good. So a couple of years ago, I started running into some problems with this installation of OpenBSD. When I bought the APU from PC Engines, I bought a 16 gig mSATA card for it, and that was fine for a long time. But OpenBSD changed how they use some of the partitions. And let me say that a different way. OpenBSD introduced some new security measures, specifically like they would rebuild the kernel or relink the kernel every time it booted up. So every time you boot up, the kernel is just a little bit different, and that helps mitigate some vulnerabilities that depend on specific things of the kernel being in specific memory addresses. But a downside to that is that it used a lot of disk space, specifically in the /user directory. So whenever I first installed OpenBSD, whenever I install OpenBSD, it has an option to auto partition, and I always use that. I figure they know better than me. The defaults with OpenBSD are always pretty sane, so I stick to them where I can. But because of the kernel relinking and the extra space that's being used during the process, the sort of minimum requirements for /user have grown, and the original partitioning scheme, you know, by this point it's 5 years old, is not big enough to support all of the everything that needs to go in /user. /user is too small. So one thing I had done over the last couple of years is I had some partitions that were the auto partitioner created that I wasn't using. There's a couple of partitions that you need if you want to rebuild OpenBSD. There's a source directory and an object directory that are separate partitions. So I would convert those. Like I would take user OBJ and convert it to user local or something like that, or user share. And I did that a couple of times, and it saved me from having to repartition, because, you know, user was getting full. But whenever the latest release of OpenBSD came out, you know, it said sort of as a minimum you need 2 gigs slash user. And my slash user partition was only one gig. So it didn't meet the minimums. I probably could have forced it through the update process, but I wasn't going to do that. So I knew that I was going to have to at least repartition, because I had 16 gigabytes would have been plenty, but I needed to rearrange it on the disk. And so to do that, really the best way to do it, the safest way to do it is just wipe and nuke and pave, as they say. But I figured if I'm going to do that, I may as well go ahead and buy a bigger disk and then start working on the rebuild project. So I bought a 120 gig mSATA card from PC Engines I had it shipped to the house, and then I started rehearsing or practicing setting up OpenBSD from scratch to sort of match what I had now. Like I've talked about, I made a lot of, you know, I had a lot of unique things that I would do with the router. And I didn't want to, you know, when I did the upgrade, I didn't want to miss any of those unique things. So I started digging around in slash Etsy or in any place else and, you know, looking in cron jobs and stuff like that, trying to gather all this stuff up. And so I decided to make a Ansible playbook that would do, you know, I find all these unique things that unique changes that I had made to the OpenBSD, gather them all up, put them in a playbook. And that way, whenever I reinstalled OpenBSD, I would have some, I would have Ansible to do all the reconfigure for me. And then, so to practice it, built OpenBSD virtual machine. The network adapters in the PC Engines machine were Intel network adapters, and OpenBSD names the network adapters by the driver, and Intel uses the EM driver, so the network devices are EM0, EM1, EM1, and EM, EM0, EM1, and EM2. So when I built the virtual machine, you have normally I would use the VertIO network adapters, but I had the option of using like an emulated Intel network adapter. So I did that. That way the network device names are the same, because that was one of the things I had to set up, was I had to, you know, EM0 on the router, needed to be EM0 on the virtual machine. That way I could practice all the network configs and stuff. Same EM1 and EM2. So I gathered all this stuff up, built a virtual machine, practiced, would find something that I missed, go back and look, add to the playbook, over and over again. I spent a lot of time doing this, not because it was a lot of work. It took me a little while to convince myself that I had actually found everything that I needed to change, and that I found everything that needed to be in the playbook. So I had this original playbook that I mentioned in this, where I did an HBR episode a couple of years ago. I had that to configure a lot of it, but not everything was in there. So I built this new one, practiced it on the VM for a little while. I'm embarrassed to say it's probably a couple of months. But finally I got to the point where I was comfortable, and then I figured that if there was something that I missed, that I was close enough that I could fix it. All right, so I finally work up the courage to start the upgrade process. One thing I wanted to do before I actually replace the OS is update the firmware, like the BIOS firmware. I didn't want there to be like an you know, any issue that with a new OS version that was maybe incompatible or acting weird or whatever with the firmware. So I did that one weekend. I updated the firmware. OpenBSD has some really good instructions for updating the firmware on the APUs. It's in the package README. There's a package called FlashROM that comes with a README, OpenBSD README that details the process. It's really simple. But I did that one weekend to kind of let it bake in. And then on a Saturday morning, before everyone else got up, went in there, made one last backup of all the config files and stuff just in case. Took everything apart, took the router out, disconnected it, powered it down, swapped the disk out, put the USB installer for OpenBSD in, booted it up, installed it, went through the regular installation, then ran the playbook on there, and man, wouldn't you believe it, it worked the first time. I was so cautious and careful that I don't think I missed anything. I was really pleased with how well the process turned out. I'll see what, I don't know what kind of show notes I'm going to have. I was just sort of rambling for a little bit. I will at least put some links in there to some of the projects that I was talking about. I found some links to IPCOP, the old sort of router-centric distribution that I was using. I got some links to a few of the PC Engine's pages, with their pages about the hardware that I was using. And then I'll link to the OpenBSD example for setting up a home router. And encourage you to, if this is something you're interested in, just jump in and do it. There's not a lot of risk. The only risk really is some of your family yelling at you because the internet's down while you're making the changes. But that's it. I'll see you guys next time.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, you can click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.